We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, everybody. Hey, and welcome back to another edition of Courtside with Christy and Gabe on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I am Christy Winter-Scott, joined as always by my guy, Gabe Ibrahim. And Gabe, my goodness, let me tell you something. Sitting courtside with you, talking about all the things that have gone on in women's basketball over the last week. And we always say this, but I'm telling you, it is incrementally exciting every single time, because there's always something happening that just spins the world around. And I just love it.
No, yeah. And I do want to say, though, it was slightly less news. I want to be real with our audience. You know, we always come on here, we say we got so much news, it was so crazy. It was slightly less news. However, we still had one of the best players in WNBA switch teams, allegedly. That hasn't officially happened yet with Liz Cambage. Not that, and I'm going to save my opinions on that for I'm doing a podcast with Jackie Powell. We had that. We had AZ Fudd's breakout game. We had Caitlin Clark doing Caitlin Clark things.
I mean,
it's like, yes, I think this week for me was a little less news, but we still had a ton. And you're right. I think the college basketball season especially is progressing. Like it's you know, it's picking up speed. It's picking up momentum. And that's why you should follow at Her Hoop Stats. Go to herhoopstats.com, herhoopstats.substack.com for our newsletter, where we're breaking down all of college basketball, WNBA, anything that's happening in women's basketball. We talk about it. And then you can follow us on Twitter. Our names just popped up below us. And we're going to do a thing too, where we split this up into two YouTube episodes, but one podcast. And I think I want to start. We should start though with college basketball, because Christy, you kind of had a big Sunday.
Oh my goodness. It was a huge Sunday. But first and foremost, happy birthday to our youngest son, Jordan Scott. He turned 15 and he accompanied me out to Los Angeles with his older brother, Jerome Jr. And we had the best time. Gabe, I can't even tell you, you know, it was like when you can intertwine work and family, I don't know. I am just in like a blissfully joyous space when that happens. And
Jordan's on varsity. We got to mention, Jordan's on varsity. He made the varsity squad this year.
He did. And he's doing really well with them. You know, South Lakes had a huge win over Madison in this last game that they played last night. And it's just so much fun just to watch him at the high school level. I can't believe it. Sometimes I pinch myself. But yeah, it was a fantastic Sunday in LA. Early call time. I had a 5:45 call time a.m. Right. But we got in on Saturday evening and had a big dinner at the Cut restaurant. It's a Wolfgang Puck steak place. Gotta go if you're ever in LA. So good. And then after the dinner, which was great, they did happy birthday, gave him a chocolate souffle. It was like the best night, and wrote happy 15th birthday on the little plate with chocolate. Anyway, but after that, we saw the Knicks, because the Knicks had just played the Lakers. And they're like, half the Knicks team was in the lobby. And I was like, excuse me, it's my son's birthday. How y'all doing? And I took some pictures, and, you know, it was just one of those like happenstances, but it was really cool. And then the boys stayed back in the hotel because 5:45, you know, to be somewhere, not wake up call, 5:45 to be in the makeup chair. So I had to get out of there and go over, but then they did like a room service, you know, at the Beverly Wilshire, which is pretty fancy smancy. And so they were chilling out, and which was really cool. So they came over to the studio in the middle of the day. But I did, you know, the pregame stuff for the Tennessee UConn game. A lot of eyes. My phone was like a little, you know, a little
blown
active.
Blown up.
A little active. You know, but that was really cool. But just to be in that moment, Mike Hill was fantastic in studio with me with Fox Sports, and we had so much fun. He's so funny, by the way. But that game was, you know, we've anticipated, this is only the third game in the last 3 years after a 13-year hiatus of these two teams not playing one another. UConn now has won all three of the last meetings. But it was, at the beginning, you could just feel the history of that moment. And obviously missing the presence of the late, great, iconic Pat Summitt in that moment. But you know that the seeds that she's planted with Kelly Harper, and the way Kelly sounds, I'm telling you, she sounds exactly like Pat when she talks. Can't get that out of my head. But just to have the connection to Pat, and then knowing that Kelly played against UConn in all those great battles, and I believe she was, as a player, 4-1 against UConn. And then now as a coach, 0-3. So she's going to get it. But they're still working out, you know, with some injury situations, and Keon Green being out with an ACL, you know, just a couple of weeks ago. So it takes time to,
for sure,
to get reacclimated. But speaking of reacclimated, wow, AZ Fudd. I mean, Gabe, what did you think of AZ?
So, I mean, I was thinking about a lot of history, because I, you know, I've read Summitt up, Pat Summitt's book. I remember reading how she talked about why they decided not to play UConn anymore. Apparently there was, you know, there are some things said in recruiting, and some things said in her personal exchange with her and Gino that were up to the wrong way. And then they eventually got through all that to have a more healthy relationship. But, you know, I was coming in thinking like, yeah, I think this is the year Tennessee's going to do it. They're going to get that monkey off their back. They're going to beat UConn. Yes. They're going to really restart the rivalry, because you need both teams to win to have a rivalry. If only one team wins, it's not a rivalry. And Tennessee hasn't been quite at that level until this year, where they come in. What were they ranked? They were ranked in the
number four.
Yeah. So they come in top five team, taking out a UConn team that had been struggling. And then boom, that spark from AZ Fudd. And, you know, I think it's good. It's great to talk about AZ. She had the 25 points. I really want to dig into what she did, but I also want to give credit to the rest of UConn, because this team came together, you know, Olivia Nelson-Adota, Kristen Williams, Davina Westbrook, Dorka Juhas, Nika Moll, like they all came together and really played like the veteran squad that we thought that they should be. Right. We saw, I think, the team that we envisioned for UConn started showing out in that Tennessee game, even without Paige Beckers.
Right.
So without their best players, they really showed up. And AZ, you know, she was a beneficiary and a catalyst of all that, right? Like she was, she had the stroke going. She was so confident. There wasn't the thought, right? There was, you know, sometimes you see freshmen and they there's not that hesitation. She just saw it. She got an open shot and she hit it. Mm-hmm. And she was just so good in that role. And I think she was part of the reason, like I'm saying, she was a catalyst for everything that UConn did. Yeah. And they use her in really unique ways as a screener, coming back out to the 3-point line, and her ability to shoot above the break threes.
Right.
It's huge for them. It gave them so much more spacing, so much more danger in their offense that Tennessee really couldn't respond to it. And I think UConn, you know, they just love to take advantage of those little tiny gaps you leave in the defense. They know exactly what they're doing. I was just so impressed with all of UConn, but I think AZ was a big part of that.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, before the game, Mike Hill asked me, he said, who needs to be the X factor? Because Desharm wasn't playing either because mm-hmm. she was injured in their last game. So she was out on top of Paige being out. Desharm had averaged 18 in the absence of Paige Becker since she's been out. So she's been a key piece to their offense, which has been struggling this season in terms of continuity and consistency and sustaining gaps in games where they had droughts in games where they just weren't scoring the ball well. And this is a team that's seventh in the country in defensive efficiency in UConn. So they can get it done on the defensive end, but they just had some lapses on the offensive side. And then with Desharm being out, I was like, oh, snap. Like, mm-hmm. you know, who is going to be that next one? And I was thinking, the first person I said was AZ Fudd, right? Because it was her first career start. And I've seen her in action since she was a tiny wee baby little girl who's in the gym, like just a flat out bucket. Okay. And, you know, she's obviously from the DMV, St. John's College High School in DC, but then played a couple of seasons of AAU basketball with GTS Fusion fam, with my daughter, Brianna, who's over at Georgetown, UConn in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. I digress. I'm excited. But even with that, just seeing her in practices with mm-hmm. GTS Fusion and games and just her incredibly laser-like focus. That's uncommon. Yeah. A lot of kids don't have that. I don't care how old, I don't care if it's WNBA level. Like a lot of people do not have that kind of mindset. And for her to know that the team needed her in that particular game, on mm-hmm. that particular stage, in that particular rivalry game, as a freshman, I knew she was going to come up big because, like you said, her confidence level is unmatched as a freshman. She is amazing in terms of her balance, getting into her shots. She made 7 threes, but the one that was most important to me was guess which one of her threes, the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, that's a wrap. Cause as soon as I saw that first one go in, I was like, that's going to be money for her the rest of the game. And I think first half, she wasn't really clicking. But then in that second half, when UConn got really on a good rhythm with their offense, she was stroking that thing, like you said. But when that first one went down, it was 3-0 UConn. I was like, oh, sit back and watch this show because she's getting ready to go off, which she did. And I mean, a career evening for her, 25 points. And, you know, they needed it. I thought it was going to be Kristen Williams because mm-hmm. last year she was the X factor, thought she needed to be the factor. But it turned out to be AZ Fudd, and I'm so happy for her.
No, and Kristen played well too. But yeah, it was just one of those games where I think this UConn team is really good, even when Paige is there, about taking what the defense gives them. And exactly. And Tennessee, you know, they tried a lot of different things. They just couldn't get out to AZ Fudd, and she has just one of the prettiest strokes mm-hmm. I've ever seen in basketball. And we're going to talk about some awesome scores. Obviously we're going to talk about Caitlin Clark. I want to talk about Taylor Robertson from Oklahoma too, but I don't think I can't think of a college player this season that I've seen with a prettier jump shot than AZ Fudd. And it really just changed the game, and she gets them off quick. And, you know, she played 39 minutes in this game, and she had she did a lot of her damage in that second half. And it's just like that is some moxie there to come in, play the most minutes on your team as a freshman, especially when you haven't been as acclimated to the team this year just because of the injuries. So for her to come in and really be the leader was so impressive. And I think, you know, as I mentioned, everyone deserves credit, but she was just unbelievable. And I think once they get Paige back, you know, those 2 or 3 weeks where we thought UConn might not be that good this year, that was fun, right? That's over. We can put that behind us. UConn's back. They will be really good. And even if they don't get Paige back this year, which is a possibility, it seems like they think Paige is going to come back at least for the tournament. Yeah. But even if they don't get Paige back this year, this team is still so dangerous with all the talent they have. Mm-hmm. If they just have just a little bit more injury luck, you know, I think we're talking about another Final Four trip. But I don't know. I don't want to get it too far ahead of ourselves. But
right.
this game to me really signified that they're kind of back. I did want to mention Tennessee, though, because Tennessee is struggling at the moment. I don't remember exactly how many games. Yeah, they've lost the last two, three of their last four. They lost an Auburn team, as we talked about, who was struggling all year. They lost to Florida, who unfortunately for me as a Miami Hurricanes fan is pretty good. And also we are not talking about the Miami Hurricanes though. That's not happening.
Yeah,
No talking about the kids. But Tennessee is not playing their best basketball. As you mentioned, they're dealing with injuries, but I just wanted to get your feel watching the game in the way you're watching it. What do you think is happening with Tennessee at the moment?
I mean, I think they're struggling with the injuries, you know, I think that's so hard. And I know it's not an excuse, it's reality. So I just have to make sure I'm clear with how I'm stating that. It's hard when you have a player who was a key piece in Kean Green and what she was able to do at 6'1", just a very versatile piece, especially on the defensive end, to miss that rotational piece that they had. That was obviously a great rhythm to get them to number four in the country. And, you know, to hit this bump in the road, literally and figuratively for them, I think it's tough. But I think this win helps UConn more than it hurts Tennessee. And I say that because of the conference that Tennessee is in. They still have to play South Carolina again. You know, I think, and Georgia, I think they still have like three or four other teams that are in the top 25 within conference play before the tournament starts. And then of course they have the tournament to get right. Okay. So with UConn, they don't really have any other teams in the Big East besides DePaul that's maybe receiving votes and down there at the 25 to 30 slot. I mean, and that was a close game last time they played. So DePaul is probably going to give them the biggest challenge, not to say other teams can't, but I'm just saying in terms of being ranked in the top 25, Tennessee has more chances to get right before tournament play and before the NCAA tournament. UConn needed this win in a big way because of seedings and the national landscape of things when it comes to ranked wins and the net rankings and all of that. So I am concerned about Tennessee because losing the way that they have lost games and understanding that coming into the UConn game, they were averaging 17 turnovers a game and that turnovers did them in against Auburn and Florida. And that second half gave, you know, some of those turnovers, I was like, wow. They just can't do that. Yeah. And coming into that game, Kelly Harper was saying, you know, we just had so many live ball opportunities that we gave to Florida at least four or five layups. You know, just long passes on the perimeter that just got picked and they went the other way. And she was adamant and saying, like, we cannot have that. So that's something obviously that they need to shore up because obviously that's empty possessions that they can't even test their wares at the rim.
Yeah.
So for me, that's my biggest concern. Can they take good care of the ball and not give live ball opportunities to their opponents moving forward in the SEC? And that's a tall task, especially when, you know, you have lost three of the last four. Your momentum is different than it was, you know, 2 weeks ago. And you look back 2 weeks ago, I think it was the 23rd of January when Kean Green got hurt. So that's like the same timeline. So maybe they just have to rework their rotations and their chemistry, but they also need to lock in on their focus in terms of taking care of the ball.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the other thing that I want to point out is they did not win the rebounding battle, which for this year's Tennessee team is not what they want. They were first in the nation in rebounding. I'm not sure if they're still there. I haven't checked that stat before we got on. But that is big for them. And I think the injuries have hurt them. One positive, though, that I want to point out is Ray Burrell kind of got her legs under her in that second half.
The first half,
it was tough sledding for her at the rim. And I want to see her as a draft prospect. I want to see her get a little bit more creativity in her finishing around the rim. But clearly one of the big issues is that she's coming off an injury and she hasn't quite gotten her legs under her. So seeing her just be a little bit better in terms of, you know, the lift that she has in that second half, I think that's big for them. And I do think there's just an amount of reworking with Tennessee that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Look, you're in a tough conference. It's a tough conference. I mean, we talked, Auburn hadn't won, I think, like 20. They had lost 20 straight SEC games coming into that one. They still almost beat a number of ranked teams before that. And since Florida is going to be ranked this week, and UConn is obviously UConn. So it's not like they've lost to scrubs, but they also don't play any scrubs. Like, they have Mizzou next, Vanderbilt at Alabama, then South Carolina. They finish off the season with LSU. So
it's going to be
a tough road, but I do think they have like you're saying, I think they have time to get it together. And I'm, you know, I'm not going to say they will, because you never know, but I think they certainly can. So Tennessee fans, don't freak out. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. I think they're going to be all right.
We have to talk about the woman of the hour, the month, potentially the year. I mean, Caitlin Clark. Good Lord. Good.
She's amazing.
Is there a college player that you can remember like this? I can't quite come up with one.
No. And, you know, and even I had no, like, stamped in my head, but then now I'm trying to recollect and it's still no. And the thing about Caitlin Clark is she's so shifty and incredibly confident with her game. And I think, you know, her logo threes that she hit. I mean, my headset was like this during that game because, you know, they fought back and it was all in her hands. I mean, she had 46 points and a loss. And she, the week before, had 43 points in a loss. And it's so hard, I'm sure, for her, because it feels like she's pouring all in to the moment and not being reciprocated with a victory for the team. And so, while it's amazingly exciting, to say the least, it must be frustrating for her to lay all of that on the line and not get a dub. And but for me, just as a fan of the game, and, you know, I need me a Caitlin Clark jersey because I'm a big fan of hers. And it's just the passion that she plays the game with, and the fight, and the confidence. I mean, that kid, you could see, like, on I think there's been over 4 million views of her logo shots.
Oh my God.
4 million. Like, so it's so good to, you know, number one, know that people are watching, number one, women's basketball, and watching what she is doing in the game. And, you know, I always say it's not just good for women's basketball, it's good for basketball, like, to see players like that. And it's not Steph Curry doing it, it's not Dame Lillard, right? It's not Clay. This young lady is dynamic and tough. And the comments, I didn't read all of them, obviously, but some of them were like, hey, there's 3 minutes in the quarter and she's pulling. I love it. You know, it's like, this kid, she doesn't care. Like, it's like, our team needs a bucket, I can make this shot. So it's not like, you know, she's coming in there randomly, just firing up, hitting just the backboard. Yeah. Clearly she's worked on that. Clearly she's worked. I mean, the one from the Michigan logo. Oh,
yeah. Her range is the gym. If she's in the gym, she's in range. Right. Period. Yeah. But and I also want to say, like, I know people are pointing out that they lost. They did lose to the number six team in the country, who is probably going to win the Big Ten. This is not a scrub team that she lost to. Michigan has a probable top five pick in Naz Hillman. They have a great team around her. They have a great coach who's been there for a long, like, who has been doing this for a long time. And they also lost to Ohio State, another ranked team. That being said, in their losses, in those two losses, they gave up 92 and 98 points. So I love what Caitlin's doing on the offense. It's incredible. It is amazing. It makes for great highlights for me personally. But they need to work on their defense. I don't even know what exactly to point to, because I think there's a lot of things to point to in terms of what they need to work on defense. But, you know, it is tough too. Just like, this Michigan team is really, really good. And their bigs, the bigs for Michigan were just like almost created to beat Iowa with the way Iowa was playing. They were playing a really tight, packed in 2-3 zone. And Naz would just pick them apart on those little passes. And so I think Michigan deserves a lot of credit But yeah, man, I mean, 46 points, 46 I points mean, on 29 shots, 10 assists as well. I mean,
yeah.
Oof. Yeah. I mean, we talk about Caitlin Clark enough, but I did think we absolutely had to mention her.
Yes.
I mean, she's incredible. And we probably need to go through a Big Ten, you know, update because,
yeah,
the conference was crazy.
It's heating up.
I want to get one answer though, because I think at this point,
okay,
Michigan has to be Michigan's favorite to win this conference. They're 11-1. Indiana's second. Indiana's still missing Mackenzie Holmes. Mackenzie Holmes might come back. She might come back this year. Yeah. We don't know yet. But I think at this point, it's kind of Michigan's conference to lose. Am I wrong in that?
No, I mean, the way that they're playing. And then in the Iowa game this past Sunday, they didn't even have Leah Brown on the floor. Mm-hmm. And she's their second double-figure scorer, almost 20 a game. Yeah. So, I mean, they were missing her. She had her foot in a boot. I believe it was her left foot. So I don't know if it's an ankle or foot situation. But she didn't even play. And they were still able to do what they did to a really great Iowa team. And like you said, Kim Barnes-Rico, I mean, she has them clicking. And I believe they moved up to fourth this week in one of the national polls. Yeah, I know they were sixth going in. Yeah. So, I mean, they're number four in the country. So we're not talking about four in the Big Ten Conference. Like, we're talking about, you know, nationally. And I just think they're playing with, I mean, a ton of confidence, but they're executing on both sides. And they're the best defensive team in the conference in terms of their stats. In terms of their, I think it's, they were only giving up 58 points per game coming into that contest, which was first in the Big Ten.
I can look that up. Also, though.
Yeah, double back on that, because I think that's what it was. And I was like, well, they're playing the D. And that's what you said. Iowa needed better defense, but Michigan had that defense going.
Opponents are averaging 59.5 points per game against Michigan. Let me get the defensive rating, though, for our nerds. Yep, they are. In Herhoopstats defensive rating, they are 20th in the country. 10th in offense leads them to being 8th in the overall Herhoopstats rating. I'm sorry, I had a quizzical look on my face. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did.
Why is Louisville ahead of NC State? I realize NC State lost to Notre Dame, but I mean, they recently played. I feel like NC State should be ahead of Louisville by virtue of that win.
Just which poll are you looking at? It's not AP.
AP.
That's AP. Wow. Well, it wasn't on my list for voting. What?
I can't check Christie's vote.
Well, darn. Oh, well.
Oh, well. We'll never know. But yeah, I think we're going to have to get into a quick Big Ten update next week, just because, you know, the conference is getting heated. And I think it's really changed since the last time we went through it. I wanted to go on a little tiny rant just quickly about Oklahoma. Boomer. Oklahoma, where the winds go sweeping down the plains. Oklahoma, they have their first 20-win season since 2016-17. And they just like are one of the best teams to watch in college basketball. They have one of the nation's fastest and most efficient offenses. They're second in points per game in the nation for our nerds. They're 18th in HHS offensive rating, third in pace. A third in possessions per game. That's what I call it, pace. And then 10th in points per shooting attempt. And I think it all goes back to Taylor Robertson. She's not only the best shooter in the country. I'm saying it full stop. Best shooter in the country.
Wow, that's big.
She's one of the best shooters ever. Ever. So she is shooting 46.8%. on 8.7 threes per game.
Dang.
Guess how many players have done that since Herhoopstats started keeping track of these?
I can't think of any, actually.
Zero. She is the best.
See, there you go.
46. Wow. She's the only player ever to shoot above 46% on 8 or more threes a game. There's been players just taking more threes and were great three-point shooters. But Robertson is just out of her mind right now. She's first in points per play in the nation. She's second, according to her hoop stats. If you look at Synergy's numbers, she's second in points per possession. Just an unbelievable player. And I want to, there's one more stat that I want to say. She has shot 51 two-pointers this year. She's shot 201 three-pointers. The game's changed.
I was going to say, that's such an analytical situation there with her.
Oh,
firing up over 200 threes.
Well, and you against West Virginia, it's really fun. I love looking at her stat lines. She's 26 points. She's 1 of 3 from 2, 7 of 14 from 3.
Wow.
Come on. She's like, come on. And it's funny too. The point I have to bring up is Maddie Williams is actually leading Oklahoma in scoring, despite all I said about Robertson. But I love the way they use Robertson as a shooter. I think they have really nice sets for her. They're doing, you know, I think one of the things I've really noticed in watching basketball more closely is if you're a good screener and you really pop out of those screens fast, you're going to get a ton of wide open shots.
Right.
Fudd does it. Yep. Taylor Robertson does it. You could go across country and in WNBA and the NBA men's, whatever.
If
you set good screens and you come out of them fast and you do every single step in that process at 100%, you're going to end up with a lot of open shots. So that's just I want to tell people that's what you do. If you want to be a shooter, that's what you do. So that's my little rant on Oklahoma, just because I started looking at their stats and I was floored by how good were. Do you want to let's talk about them though in the context of the Big 12?
Sure.
Because this conference is another one that I think we're going to have to do a nice roundup for, because there's a lot of really good teams. Iowa State's on top of the conference, tied with Oklahoma at 9-2. We got Baylor at 7-3, Kansas State at 7-4. Texas has lost a couple games in a row, so they're behind Kansas. And just so many good teams here and many excellent players. I mean, every team you look at, they have a star player. Ashley Jones for Iowa State, Taylor Robertson and Maddie Williams for Oklahoma. Baylor has either the number one or number two pick if you listen to people, Melissa Smith, and then obviously Ayoka Lee. So just what do you think about this conference, and do you think, I mean, like, if I don't know, we don't have to handicap it, but just what are your general thoughts?
I mean, like all of the top conferences, there's, you know, everyone's beating up on one another. So it's just interesting to watch how they're doing that, right? Not the fact necessarily that it is happening, but how it's happening. And when it comes down to conference play, it's all about matchups. It really is. Mm-hmm. It's about personnel, it's about style of play, and it's about matchups. And if you can take away the strengths of other teams and exploit their weaknesses, you're going to have a day. And I think that's what we're seeing with Texas, with them losing and, you know, the last couple of games, but we know what they're capable of, right? We know what they're able to do. And then when you see a team like Iowa State, I mean, they beat Iowa out of conference, you know, they have some strong wins out of the conference, but within the conference to be sitting at the top, I mean, that's super impressive, especially with a team like Baylor and Melissa Smith sitting there just a couple spots behind them. So you're looking at it on paper and you're like, well, wow, it should be Baylor, right? Because of what they did last year, they're bringing back pretty much everybody except for maybe two starters. But I think what is really intriguing to watch is how these teams game plan for one another and what they choose to take away and what they choose to say, hey, she can get hers, we're going to take away the next situation that we would have, right? So I think that's interesting. And I love watching, you know, the game plan of it all, and usually figure it out by the middle of the first quarter, like what are their rules today? Yeah. Or what are they looking to do to disrupt this team? And what are they doing offensively to attack? Where are they looking to attack this particular team? So I think when you're watching any conference games, but when you're watching games, don't just watch it for the score and who wins or who doesn't. Look at the strategy of it. I mean, that's the beauty of the game. And I think that's what we've seen in this conference, but I think with Iowa State, I mean, they're just so disciplined.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're sitting at the top.
No, I agree. I mean, it's old boxing saying, styles makes fights, right? So I left this out when I was talking about Oklahoma. They're the team that gave up 61 points to Ayoka Lee. Why? Probably has something to do with the fact that they're the fastest team in the country and they don't have a big to stand up to Ayoka Lee in the paint. And I think that that kind of goes up and down this conference. Like you're saying, you have a team like Iowa State who is so disciplined and they work really well, and they may have an advantage over a team like an Oklahoma or a Baylor that wants to get out and run. I'm Baylor though. Texas unfortunately had the misfortune of playing Baylor back to back. So that's a tough assignment.
Sure.
And I think Baylor probably has the highest ceiling of any team here. Mm-hmm. If you told me one team from the Big 12 made it to the Final Four, I'd probably say it was Baylor at this time.
Okay.
But they're really rounding the corner. I think they're rounding the corner on the three-point shooting, on the strategy, and getting in used to Nicky Collins' right. offense. They're rounding the corner, but I don't know. I mean, Oklahoma could beat them and you know, in the Big 12 tournament, no problem. Like I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. Iowa State could do it. You know, Kansas State has one of, if not the best player in the country at the moment. And then Texas, you know, if you're not fully ready for that press system that Vic Schaefer runs, you're dead. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And teams have gotten ready for it.
Yeah.
But that's what, so I think you're right. Styles makes fights in the Big 12 and across conferences. You know, you look at the ACC is a little bit more, not normal, but they're a little bit more together. It's more cohesive. Styling in the ACC. But then you look at the Big 10, the Big 12, it's like these teams are just wildly different in everything they want to do. So I think it's really difficult to game plan in these conferences. I applaud the coaches, but I do love it. That's just like what you're saying, that watching the fights, the style clashes that are happening. Do you want to get some games on the schedule for this weekend?
Absolutely.
Okay. I have a theory. Humor me. So I'm calling this Saturday.
Okay.
I mean, sorry, this Sunday, because there's games on Saturday that fall into this category.
Right. But okay.
This Sunday, false spring Sunday. We live in the district. It's getting a little warm, right?
It's warm and it's February. It's weird.
It's a false spring. We will get back to cold. I'm sure we'll get back to cold soon. It's a false spring. And that's why this weekend's Fall Spring Sunday, because we're going to find out who's blooming into a contender.
All right.
And which teams are going to be stuck in winter come March. You like that?
I love that. It's groundhog-ish. I like it.
I toyed with calling it Groundhog Day, but I want it to be a little different. You know?
I like the difference.
But yeah, so we got Georgia, South Carolina. I'm not putting anything on Georgia. Poor Georgia. Anyone who has to play South Carolina, I feel bad for you guys. I'm sorry. But we have Michigan, Northwestern, back to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to figure out exactly how good Michigan is and how good Northwestern is, because I think Northwestern's probably a tournament team at the moment.
Right.
And they have a chance to really solidify that resume against Michigan. And I don't see a reason why they couldn't win. We also have Vanderbilt, Tennessee. Tennessee needs to get back to their winning ways. And Vanderbilt has pulled off some upsets or an upset this year. So that's totally possible. We have Virginia Tech, North Carolina battling for spots in the ACC. Whoever wins that probably has the inside lane to getting a higher seed in the tournament. And NCAA, Notre Dame, Louisville, and Notre Dame coming off that big upset of NC State, looking to take on Louisville, Duke, NC State, Arizona State, Arizona, Colorado, Stanford, LSU, Texas A&M, Oregon State, Oregon, all these teams really hoping to say, we are contenders. Make sure you have us in your top five seeds for the NCAA tournament, your bracketologies this weekend. So any of those games really, really interesting to you?
Oh man, you rattled off a ton of them, but I would tell you what, I am all for a great Big Ten battle in Michigan and Northwestern. I think that, you know, with the tournament starting in 3 weeks, I think, well, maybe a month, but I'm pushing it. So 3 weeks and a little bit of change, 3 weeks and some change. I think it's always intriguing this last month of conference play, but I think, you know, with Michigan coming off that big win, sometimes it's tough, you know, that next game, you know, to come back and bring that same moxie. So that, I think that's going to be a big test for them. Especially against a team like Northwestern with their blizzard defense, that they're going to be trying to be disruptive, and they rotate quickly. They're right there up the line, and Burton and her quick hands. Come on, man. That's going to be a great challenge. And who knows if Leah Brown is back
Yeah,
you know, for that game. So I think that's going to be something to keep eyes on, but I mean, throughout the ACC, I think also there's some really great games. I mean, I love that matchup with Virginia Tech and North Carolina. I think that's going to be a really, I love Kenny Brooks, you know, even when he was at James Madison and what he did there, winning championship after championship in the CAA. I think that's going to be a true test, especially, well, I know we're not talking about Miami, but I was going to say, especially since North Carolina had that big win.
They had a big win over blank last weekend. Over redacted. We're not mentioning the score, certainly.
No, I was quite surprised by that.
If you want to look at the Miami-North Carolina game on your own time. We're not talking about it.
We're not going to talk about it. But I kind of ran down the road to a dead end on that one. But it was the story. It just happened to be their previous matchup. So, sorry. So I like those matchups off the top. And I know there's so many games this weekend that are going to be fantastic matchups. I know in the Big East on Sunday, I know UConn takes on Marquette. I think that's going to be a big game too. And I'll be on that game with Lisa Byington, by the way.
Oh, really?
That's why that's going to be a good game in a lot of ways, because I miss Lisa. She's with the Milwaukee Bucks now, so I miss working with her. So.
Finally, that's awesome. Get back with her. We get Lisa back for a game. That's great.
Lisa B. Yay.
Oh, that's awesome.
That'll be fun. I'm excited.
We also have the Red River shootout. Well, I guess we don't call it the Red River shootout anymore, but I'm calling it the Red River shootout. Oklahoma and Texas on Saturday. There's big games throughout the week. I just wanted to, you know, name a Sunday because I think it's fun. I think that I'm with you on the Virginia Tech North Carolina game. I wrote a story on Virginia Tech earlier this year. I'm really high on Elizabeth Kitley. I think Asia Shepherd is a WNBA player. I think they're going to face a big, big test in North Carolina with that defense, especially if North Carolina can score the way they did in their previous game against an unknown opponent.
redacted
opponent. I'm kind of interested in this Arizona State Arizona game. You know, Arizona State. First off, rivalry game. Second off, it's going to be what day is that? Is that the 11th? So it's going to be the second one of a back-to-back with these two teams. So they're going to be familiar with each other. And Arizona State just pulled off a big upset of Oregon. They beat Oregon State as well. So look, I'm just saying that'll be a fun game if it's close. And I think it will be. And then LSU Texas A&M also going to be a frisky good game. So just your Sunday, fall spring Sunday, you know. Hey, I'm going to be wearing a tank top because it'll be like 60 degrees. I'll be outside, but you got to have it in your back of your mind. Like, hey, winter could come back. Don't get too comfortable.
Don't get too happy with
what's happening now. Okay. That's all I want to talk about with college basketball. Is there anything else you want to mention?
With college basketball? No, I'm just going to leave it right there. And I thought, you know, we really did a comprehensive examination of NCAA women's basketball. So many great things, so many great storylines. And next week is going to be even more exciting because it's like you build bricks with things, you know, it's just like, boom, boom. I love it as we head into conference tournament play. And then of course the NCAA tournament. So that'll be awesome to continue to keep track of.
Yeah. These podcasts are going to get longer as we head into March. we're already pushing to an hour and 30 minutes pretty much every time. That doesn't matter. You guys seem to be watching it and listening to it.
It's fun.
Sounds great. There's chapters, by the way, on the bar below us or in the podcast description. With that being said, let's move over to the WNBA. As I mentioned at the top, I'm going to try to keep my opinions on Liz Cambage for my podcast with Jackie Powell for Friday. But we obviously need to get some reaction. So Christy, your thoughts on Liz Cambage going to LA. Also Jordan Canada's going to LA and Katie Lou Samuelson's going to LA. So reaction to what the Sparks did.
If I were to sip this coffee and spit it out, that would be that was my initial reaction when I saw Cambage to LA. Oh boy. You know, and then I had to double check sources and, on social, I was like, wait, is that true? Wait, is that someone hoping that happens or is that actually happening? And boy, I mean, it's actually happening. So that freaked me out. I did not see that coming at all. I thought she was going to stay with the Aces and with Asia Wilson. I thought they were a good dynamic duo. So for me, I don't know, it was quite shocking. I don't know if there's another word. I was surprised at that. And I'm not mad at it, but I was surprised. I mean, that's what she wants to do. I think she fits in LA too, with all of her DJing and her personality and all the other things she's doing. But Vegas isn't bad for that either. So I don't know. It's not like she's, you know, I think it's a lateral move in that way in terms of marketing.
Oh, LA. No, come on. We got to give LA credit. You went to LA.
I was just in LA.
Did you feel like a star?
I did. And then I came back home. I was like, man, what's going on? What happened to all the, where's the chauffeur taking my bag in the house? Like, what is happening? But yeah, I was spoiled out there in LA, and the palm trees and the 70 degree weather. Yeah.
It ain't bad.
So yeah.
I go to LA. I'm just like, I feel like I'm in a movie, obviously, because it is where all the movies are made. But I don't know. Yeah. I feel like I'm like, every time I go to LA, I'm like, ooh, I feel like Don Draper in Mad Men. Like when Don goes to LA, he's like a completely different person. And when I'm in LA, I'm just like a completely different person. I don't know if that person's better or worse, but I am completely different. But yeah.
Yeah. I was definitely different for the 48 hours I was there, or less, probably 40 hours I was there. It was different for me for sure.
I'm really excited though for the Liz the star in LA. Liz the basketball player in LA is going to be more of an interesting idea that I have to get my head wrapped around a little bit more. But it's going to be fun. I think without a doubt it will 100% be fun. And we're going to enjoy it as fans, and we'll see how they do. We'll see how they do.
Yeah, we will see.
So let's bring us though from the La La Land back to reality here in DC.
Okay.
Contavious Caldwell Pope of going from LA to DC.
Okay, here we go.
I just want to take a brief second. I know we're talking WNBA, but shouts to all my Heat fans here in the suburb of Miami called Washington, D.C., because we took over the Wizards game. We were so hyped. We were yelling.
I was going to say that probably. I knew you were there without knowing for sure that you were there, but I knew you were there.
I started so many Let's Go Heat chants, and we were talking. We were kind, but it did get a little heated. So shouts to all my Heat fans in D.C., if you guys are listening. I want to talk about the Mystics though, because you know I want to get really deep into it. I don't think we've gone quite deep into the Mystics yet. So they obviously have changed this team substantially. Tina Charles is off to Phoenix, which crazy. We'll definitely talk about that again.
Dang.
But Tina Charles is off to Phoenix. They bring in Elizabeth Williams. We talked a little bit about the fit with Elizabeth Williams, but the more I think about it. I'm just kind of wondering, like, do you think they finish their finishing lineup? Because remember, your finishing lineup is much more important than your starting lineup. True. And while I know there's going to be matchups and all that, in general, do you think the finishing lineup for this team includes Elizabeth Williams, or do the Mystics kind of go, you know, I'm putting in quotes, small-ish with Elena Delladonna at the five, Maisha Hines Allen at the four?
No, I mean, this is just my personal opinion without knowing, you know, strategy from Mike Tebow. I just think, you know, to have a rim protector in and a rebounder in at the end of games is vitally important. So if I'm coaching, which I'm not, but if I am, I would like to have, and it also depends on matchups and who you're playing. However, I would feel a lot more comfortable defensively and rebounding wise, which is kind of one and the same, having Elizabeth Williams on the floor. Offensively, I mean, she said, you know, I'm known as a defensive rebounding kind of player, block shots kind of player. But I came to DC because I want to test what I can do offensively. So I think that right there solidifies it for me, because we already know what she's going to bring defensively, right? Mm-hmm. We already know what she's going to bring on the glass. So let's see what she does on offense too. Can she be a key piece on that side of the court for the Mystics? And the fact that she wants to do that, you know, and the fact that we've seen her evolve over her career, you know, from Duke now here, you know, I think it's something to definitely take a look at. But I would have her on the floor at the end of the game. But I think they need to go big at the end, just to solidify their defense and just to solidify the glass.
Yeah, I agree. And I think to a certain extent, this also depends on Maisha Hines-Allen's development. You know, she's obviously been a key piece to this team for a long time, but or at least for the last 2 years. But she, you know, I think last year she didn't quite make that next step that we saw, that, you know, we saw
as potential.
She was injured. She came to camp late. I think it was a weird season in a ton of regards. Her role kept changing. So with a little bit more stability, if she develops into the player that we see, the potential that we see, I'm it's going to be really hard to keep her off the court. And then you're going to have to, you know, change your mechanics around. And, you know, if her shooting continues like this, they can run that true five out system, you know, Natasha Cloud, Errol Atkins, Alicia Clark, Maisha Hines-Allen, Elena Deladon. That's an incredible five in terms of.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like that list.
Offense. In terms of offense, that's an incredible five. But with the addition, though, of Elizabeth Williams, I want to know if you agree with this. This is the most defensive talent that the Mystics have had in the Elena Deladon era. You have Natasha Cloud, Alicia Clark, Ariel Atkins, Elizabeth Williams. All four players have made an all-defense team.
Yep.
And then you have Maisha Hines-Allen, who, in my opinion, is no slouch on that end.
Right.
I think for this team, the reason they didn't make the playoffs last year was because of their defense.
Yeah.
With a healthy Alicia Clark and with Elizabeth Williams, I think they can get up to their highest defensive rating in the Elena Deladon era. Do you think that's true, or am I being a little too optimistic?
Oh, no, I'm 1,000% in agreement with that, because, I mean, Mike Thibault even alluded to that, saying that, you know, they have four players who are made all defensive teams. Mm-hmm. And he said that, you know, maybe that'll motivate everybody else on the team. You know what I mean? To be that, you know, tactically sound on the defensive end. And I think there's something to be said for that, because when you're around players who are focused and digging in and communicative on the defensive end, it rubs off. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, you can score it, but wow, if you can get into those passing lanes, and I just envision Ariel Atkins and Alicia Clark, you know, getting in the passing lanes and going the other way. And I see Elizabeth Williams blocking shots and protecting the rim.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is a good kind of challenge for the other players who haven't yet made a defensive team, you know, an all defensive team, but to be around that kind of culture on that side of the ball, I think it's going to be great. And I think Elena Deladon kind of alluded to the fact that we have a lot of great young players, but also a lot of great experienced players on the floor. And I think when you have experience, I mean, defense to me is something that you're most comfortable with, especially in the WNBA, when your learning curve is different, you know, illegal defense. Like, you have to make sure you're where you need to be.
No.
And you're talking, because it's fast and there's a lot of ball screen actions, a lot of pin down stuff that you need to be in the right place to cover. So I just think that, you know, when you're around people who know where to be and when to be at certain places, especially on the defensive end, I think it just makes it easier to be cohesive. And then I think it's going to pay off on the other side for them as well.
Well, and the other thing is that with this defense, not only are they talented, you know, Alicia Clark, one of the best defenders in this league in basketball, period. They are also really good communicators. And that's what you need with defense. Like,
that is.
You can have someone who's not, maybe not as quick, maybe someone who's not, you know, the sort of rim protector. And I'm talking about Lance Deladon, let's be real. The weak link here on this awesome defense would be Lance Deladon. But she's an excellent communicator. Like, she doesn't she understands the game so well that even with some of her physical limitations, and we'll see what you know, what those are if she's healthy this year.
Right.
She's still can be a part of a plus defense because of the way she communicates. And I think that's going to be a big part of why this team is so good, because they have so much communication. They have so much veteran talent that they can really put together a strong defense. They have not been above average in defense since 2015.
Wow.
So I think this year could be, and hopefully will be, the year that they, you know, break through and have an above average defense. And with the offensive talent that we just talked about, I think this is a team that could be scary. However, though, I think we got to talk about this because it's not fun. We have to kind of think about this team with Elena Deledon, as we have been, and without Elena Deledon, just in case, because you don't know what her back situation is going to be during the season. She seems healthy. She worked out with Team USA.
Yeah,
she's definitively said that she will be ready for the season, which did not happen last year.
No,
she was more wishy-washy about last season. So this year she's saying she's going to be ready. She feels great.
Yeah.
But considering the history, where do you think this team is without Elena Deledon? Are they still in the playoff mix?
I think so. I think they have enough. And I think what we were just talking about, the defense will carry them over the finish line to get to the playoffs. Obviously with Deledon, a given. Without her, it'll be tougher, obviously, but I think they could still make it there because they're going to get the stops necessary to get the offense generated that they need. So I'm just really hoping and praying that Elena Deledon stays healthy all season long. And if she needs, you know, on a back-to-back night, and no pun, but if on a back-to-back game situation, schedule-wise, if she needs to take that second game off, I'm good with that. You know, whatever it takes to preserve her health, I am here to cheer that on and just want her to be able to sustain her great level of play. And the fact that she is just, I mean, she exudes joy when she was talking about, I've been pain-free for months.
Yes.
And I'm like, and you can see it resonated in her face that she is, you know, put herself through the rigors and gone through some contact drills and all that for an hour and a half. And afterwards she's saying that the recovery is a lot better. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have pain after I do a really strenuous workout. So hopefully she'll be able to sustain that throughout the season. And, you know, she'll continue to say, you know, I've been months pain-free as the season starts too. So it remains to be seen, but I'm very optimistic. Pun intended, about Elena Deledon.
Well, the discourse around her and this team is different this year than last year. Certainly, as I mentioned, like she is much more confident in her health this year, and you know she's much more confident in her health. I think we have reason to be, but I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to get like my hopes up for me and for her, because then you know I want her to be healthy and happy first and foremost, and I want her to be playing basketball, but you know, she has a life. So I'm hoping, and I'm with you sending so many good vibes that she's healthy, but if she's not, I'm with you. I think they can still compete for a playoff spot. I'm not sure that I wouldn't put them in the title contender category, but especially if the number one pick comes in, whoever that is, and can contribute immediately.
Right.
This team's really strong. This team's really, really strong. So I think they can still compete for a playoff spot. I'm not necessarily sure I picked them, and I'm not necessarily sure, you know, they may want that to be in the lottery at that point. But I think if this number one pick comes in and that person can really contribute, then yeah, of course, even with Elena Deledon, this team can compete for a playoff spot. I think with Elena Deledon, I don't think I put them in the top tier of WNBA, but they're lurking.
They're lurking.
You got a lot of players with a lot of championship experience that are ready to go, and a team that makes a lot of sense together. You know, of the teams that have reshaped themselves, Washington has an argument for being the one that fits the best together.
I agree.
I'm hopeful that Elena Deledon will play, and that even if she does have some, you know, injury problems, or in just the games that she misses, they'll be able to stay afloat. I think that would be huge for them. And that's in large part due to Elizabeth Williams. So I do want to mention something that's not as much fun, just to let our folks know, that the Mystics will have to go likely with 11 players this year. So in training camp, there's going to be some cuts of some folks that we all know. They'll likely have to cut either Erica McCaw or Sydney Weiss to have a legal roster. Sydney Weiss would probably have to go if they wanted to keep both. Tiana Hawkins and Shatori Walker-Kimbrough, plus a player on a 0 to 2 year minimum, because that's cheaper. If they decide to go with two players in the lower minimum and one of Shatori Walker-Kimbrough and Tiana Hawkins, then they can cut Erica McCall. That's just salary stuff. I can get more into it on Twitter.
Wow.
But that's just the situation. That's just a situation, is that one of those players is going to probably get squeezed here. And we also are still waiting on the mystery move that was teased.
I know.
Our Twitter sleuths have kind of thought that it's Rui Machida, the Japanese point guard. Because she fits into that little silhouette that they posted on Twitter.
I know. I've been trying to figure out the silhouette, and it's really hard.
The people on Twitter seem to think it's her. I just wanted to say, like, if someone is getting cut here on this roster, I personally hope that Tiana Hawkins and Shatori Walker-Kimbrough are back, because then we get to see the bands back together. And I think they'll fit.
Yeah. I like it. And who knows who that silhouette person is, but if it is her, say her name again.
Rui Machida.
She will make a big difference, because if that's who it is, isn't she like a 3-point dynamo?
She's like awesome.
Just go on, man. Like, I'm good. Bring her over here.
Let it fly. Leilani Mitchell does not appear to be coming back. I think actually Leilani's pregnant, I'm not sure. I saw that somewhere that she was pregnant and that she signed up to coach in Australia this year. So congratulations to her. But it appears that she will not be back, and that opens the door for Rui Machida, who happens to play a lot like Leilani Mitchell.
I did not know about Leilani. Leilani, congratulations.
Yeah, right. I think it's her second kid.
Yes, Cash is her son. Yeah.
Yes. Cash.
Winning. Cash.
I'd love this. It'd be amazing. I don't have any reporting to suggest that this is true yet.
Okay.
If it is, though, it's really fun. However, you guys should go back and look at what she did in the Olympics last year. She had 18 assists against France in that semifinal game, which was a banger. Oh, so go back and watch her and get a little excited. Because that'd be super fun.
That would.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I do think McCall, or I mean, I don't think, looking at the numbers, McCall or Weiss are going to have to go. I don't know. Who would I keep out of those two with this roster?
That's tough. I hate the business of basketball, right? It's like, just keep them both and let's just play. But unfortunately, can't do it.
It's a salary cap. The cap is what it is, and they have to deal with it. I don't know. They don't have a lot of wing. Oh, they do have a lot of. I don't know. Do they need a wing more or a big more?
I think they need a big more.
I think they need a big more. Erica brought a lot. You know,
she did.
Not just when she was playing, but also on the bench in terms of her chemistry.
Energy. I don't know. I'm glad I don't have to make that decision, because that's just tough. Because they both obviously deserve to be in the league and on this team, but you know, contractually speaking, you have to make tough choices and decisions. So I don't know.
I don't know for them. But regardless, I think this is an exciting Mystics team that we're going to see on the floor, especially if Landon's healthy, and especially with the number one pick, which we got to get in at some point, maybe next month when WNBA free agency calms down, we'll get into exactly who we think of this. Because I've already given we kind of got into it, but I want to get into it a little bit. I want to get into it a little bit more. Okay, do you want to talk about Team USA?
Yes, because they are here in DC, number one, and I know. You know, my daughter Brianna Scott is over at Georgetown, and I know they've been working out at McDonough Arena.
Oh my gosh.
So they're not allowed to go in, but they've seen the players. And I know Kelsey Plum and the assistant coach for Georgetown, Sugar Rogers, are very close, because Sugar was assistant with the Aces in the WNBA. And she said some really, really great things. Look it up on Twitter. It's really sweet. And Sugar signed off on it and said Sugar Plum. So I guess Kelsey calls Sugar Plum. And I thought that was the best. But she said that how sugar has totally impacted her life in a positive way. And I can co-sign that for Bree, because that's who she works out with her individual mm-hmm. workouts and stuff like that. And she's always so encouraging and really a great piece to the puzzle for Georgetown. So all the things that Kelsey was saying, I was like, I hear that every day from Brianna. And so with USA basketball being right here in DC, I think they play Belgium on Saturday at 4:30 at ESA. Am I right? They play an exhibition game. Yeah.
It's a real game.
Oh, it's not exhibition. Okay.
Let me get the schedule up. But these are the World Cup qualifiers.
Although
I was kind of like under the impression that the U.S. qualified because they.
That's why won. I thought it was like exhibition game, like we're just getting some games in, but it's qualifiers. Okay.
We're in the qualifying tournament. I thought we qualified. I don't know, guys. I'm sorry. My grasp on international basketball is not like the best. So I will get a better answer for you. However, here's the schedule. I'm looking at it. So we got Belgium, Puerto Rico tomorrow. Right. I'll be heading to that one. And then, yeah, the biggie on Friday, USA, Belgium, 6:30.
What's Saturday? Saturday is something. There's
Saturday, a game Saturday. USA, Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay. Okay. I knew that was one on Saturday.
And then get this. I want to talk about Team USA's roster, but get this. So Russia was supposed to come to DC, but they have a different vaccine. I don't know if they don't have a vaccine. I didn't get exactly what was happening, but took a different vaccine that was not like permitted for entry into the United States. So Russia is playing Puerto Rico and Belgium in the Dominican Republic as part of this DC, like part of the qualifiers. So it's listed here on the website as Washington, like the locations first listed, Washington, DC, but then it says at Dominican Republic because Russia cannot enter the country.
Oh boy.
So now Belgium has to come here.
What difference does it make? Right, but how big of a difference? And I, you know, I'm not angry. I'm just wondering.
I have no idea what's happening. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, like, how does that happen? They go to the Dominican Republic and play the same teams that play teams here in the United States without
masks. Oh no, afterwards.
Oh, after. Okay. So, yeah, is it during the same
time? So Belgium's coming here.
Oh, I get it. Playing, okay.
They're playing here on Friday.
Got it.
And they're flying to to Dominican Republic to play on Sunday. So we're having Russia, Belgium in the Dominican Republic.
I get it now. Okay. Because I was like, wow, why are they doing that if they're going to come back and play the same teams they're going to have interactions with? I don't know. This virus is, you know, it's complicated.
The whole thing is, you guys know. I don't know how to take us. Let's talk about this Team USA roster, though. I think everyone who made it, the players who didn't make it, they didn't make it because they were injured or coming off an injury. So Landeldon, Benaz Jelani, I don't have the full list of everyone who showed up to camp, but pretty much everyone who showed up to camp and is not playing is coming off an injury, and that's why they're not playing.
Right.
The roster, as you might imagine, though, is still pretty awesome. So I'm gonna list out the experienced players. We have Jewel Lloyd, Kelsey Plum, as you mentioned, Ariel Atkins, DC Zone, Steph Dolson, Alicia Gray, and Chelsea Gray. Those are all players that have been with Team USA and played with Team USA in the last Olympics or on the 3-on-3 team. We have the entire 3-on-3 team back. And then we have some newcomers, Natasha Howard, who is super pumped up on Twitter. I know most of you guys can't follow her on Twitter because her tweets are protected. But Natasha Howard was pumped up about being on Team USA. Brianna Jones, Kayla McBride, Kelsey Mitchell, De'Erica Hamby, and Alyssa Thomas. Alyssa Thomas finally on this team.
Finally. Yes, please.
So do you want to pick a starting lineup?
What? Me?
I can go first.
You go first, man, because you know it's a lot. I'm like calculating too many things.
So here's what I got. So Chelsea Gray has to be a starter point guard. No offense to anybody else. Yeah. I think Jewel Lloyd has to start the two. No offense to Chelsea Plum. Then at the three, there's so many options that it gets a little complicated. I'm stuck here and I could use your help between Ariel Atkins and Kayla McBride. I mean, I know Ariel. We obviously
I'm going with Ariel Atkins. I'm going with AA. And it's because of her defensive energy too. You know what I mean? I think, and her consistency. Mm-hmm. And all things aside, even if she didn't play here in DC, I would say that, you know, just her skill set and her speed and energy on the defensive end, and the fact that she can stroke the three. And not that Kayla McBride can't.
That's a thing.
But I think she's more consistent, most consistent with her shooting. And I don't know what her hoop stats says about the consistency of that stat for those two, but that's just from, you know, putting my eyes on both of them and just thinking it through just here on a knee jerk reaction. But I think Ariel Atkins maybe earns that three spot. Yeah.
I think so. Okay. I don't know though. I mean, cause Kayla McBride brings a lot of the same things you're saying. And she's obviously a great player. Atkins may have the edge in terms of experience with Team USA. I mean, I think you have to throw Alicia Gray into this mix as well, just because she brings a little bit more length than either of them.
True.
I don't know. Let's go, Ariel Atkins. Home.
Yeah.
She's at home. She's at home. Let her be in the center. at the four, this is a very difficult decision.
This is bad.
But I don't know. I think you got to go with Alyssa Thomas. I don't see how you don't.
No, she's a machine.
No shape. Well, it's also the issue here is like, so there's Alyssa Thomas.
Right.
And I'd say the next best player on this team, well, Natasha Howard and Alyssa Thomas are kind of neck and neck, and they would both probably ideally play the four.
Right. But
I don't think, like, I think you have to put Thomas in the starting lineup because she's just a little bit better. She brings something that the other players don't bring. So I want to get her on the floor a little bit more. I probably shift Natasha Howard to the five, but I have a slash line here just because Steph Dolson works so well in these situations, you know, where there's a bunch of star players and she kind of has to just be the passer, the screener, the rebounder, do the dirty work. She works so well in that position. Not that Natasha Howard doesn't, obviously, but I think you have to give her a little bit of credit here enough to say that she may be. She's really the only her and Breonna Jones are the two true centers.
Right.
I think I would go Natasha Howard over both of them, but I think Dolson definitely deserves a little bit of consideration there.
Yeah, I agree. I like Natasha Howard and, you know, what she was able to do on the interior in particular. I mean, she is such a striker from the high post area in terms of driving and finishing.
Yeah.
They need that. And defensively, they need that too. And what she's able to do on the glass. So I like that. And to put her alongside Alyssa Thomas, I mean, that to me is a combustible situation in the paint for anyone who they play. They're going to be so disruptive. And then Ariel Atkins in the gaps. And then you said Jewel Lloyd and, oh my God, Chelsea Gray. I mean, I'm just salivating right now thinking of what they're all going to look like on the floor. But I, you know, thank you for walking me through that. Process of choosing, but I think those five would be so dynamic together. I think that makes it a great group.
I'm gonna look at Belgium's roster really quick. Just I want to see it. I want to see what the roster is for this World Cup qualifying if I can find it.
I'm sure Chicago Sky's Emma Niesman is on there.
I'm sure. I don't know if Julie Alamond is playing for them right now. I can't find the roster, guys. Come on. I need a little bit of help. Internet. You're killing me. You're killing me. You're only showing me the 2020. Okay. We'll have to talk about Belgium USA after the fact. But that's gonna be an awesome game. Yeah, you got Emma Mieseman. I think Julie Alamond might be there. They have a great commitment to their national team, the Belgians do.
Yes.
And it's going to be a really interesting game because this USA team's awesome, but that Belgian team has a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And there's some players missing here in the USA that could open the door for Belgium to win. Again,
very true.
Anyone out there that knows what this tournament actually means, because I was under the impression that we made the World Cup by virtue of winning the World Cup.
To qualify already.
But if someone can explain that to me, maybe I'm completely wrong, folks. So don't.
And me too. And me. Explain it to me too.
I'm glad we're saying this at the end of the podcast. Don't listen to us on this one. All right, Christy. That's all I got. We're getting out of here a little bit early. Only an hour and 12 minutes.
Look at us. That's brief. for us. That is very brief for us. But I do, before we go, I have to give a shout out to Playa Society.
All right.
You know, support your Black owned businesses, people. I did. This wasn't a freebie. I supported it. It was Black History Month. Black women run it. And Playa Society. Oh, and I have the pants too. Wait, this is on YouTube, right?
Yes. Ooh, I love those pants
too. And it's comfortable. And I'm not being, you know, a paid, you know, advertiser or sponsor, but it's nice and thick. Like, seriously. And the sleeves are long enough. I have super long arms. Mm. The sleeves are down and it's like crazy thick and warm and cozy. It's really good. So Playa Society, go on their IG.
You know, I thought it was because I'm Cuban and from Miami. I thought it was Playa Society.
Well, I mean, it very well could be, but Playa.
No, there's not a beach. There's not a playa. Beach. It's Playa. I'd call it Playa because I've lived in Miami for too long. Playa Society. If you would like to sponsor Courtside, though, simply hit us up. We love your stuff.
I could give a set to Brie or something. You know, I already have this one, but I can give her if another one comes along.
Two wonderful models. I have a camera. I could take pictures. I'm not necessarily a model type.
We can do it.
we can do it, guys. So let us know. Playa Society / Playa Society, or anyone who wants to send us stuff, we will wear it and
we will wear
relentlessly plug it. Okay.
Absolutely. But you know what? They're cutting these lights out on us again, Gabe. My God, what another great episode of Courtside with Christy and Gabe right here on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. We will check you out next time. For Gabe Ibrahim, I am Christy Winter Scott. See you next time.
Jesus.